from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum on Saturday, amid protests, Enrique Peña Nieto officially began his six-year term as the new president of Mexico. We'll assess what Mexico's future is apt to look like under Nieto and what relations between Mexico and the United States are likely to be, as the new leader and President Obama last week pledged closer ties. Then at 9:30, KQED announced today that it has teamed up with the Knight Foundation and Public Radio Exchange to launch Matter Ventures, a startup accelerator designed to foster media innovation. Popular in Silicon Valley, startup accelerators offer investment, mentoring, and other assistance to entrepreneurs. But can such a model work for public media? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Saturday, Mexico's new president, Enrique Peña Nieto, who won 38% of the vote in a three-way race as the pre-candidate, that's the Industrial Revolution Party, officially took office as protests took place. Nieto replaces outgoing President Felipe Calderón with a six-year term and a vow to reshape education, energy, and business in ways that could profoundly affect the people of Mexico as well as the United States. The new president unveiled a 13-point plan for the nation's future, and he met last week with President Obama in Washington, both leaders pledging cooperation and progress on matters of mutual interest and concern. And in this forum, first half hour, we discuss Mexico, its new leadership, and its future. And first, we go to Mexico City and welcome Alfredo Corchado back to Forum, Mexico Bureau Chief with the Dallas Morning News, and good to have you. Good morning.
Great to be back with you, Michael.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. And Alfredo, first of all, I guess I want to get a gauge since Nieto only won 38% and since he doesn't necessarily have a strong support, so many people continuing to be in opposition to the pre-party and being very skeptical about it. What's the opposition look like?
Well, at least Saturday, the opposition was pretty vociferous, pretty powerful. I think people expected that there'd be some kind of protest, but no one really thought that they would see what we witnessed throughout the day. And even to some extent today, there is more protests that are planned. Even as we speak, parts of Reforma have been shut down again. They're small groups, but the damage they did on Saturday was quite impressive.
Damage of what sort?
Damage to buildings throughout what's known here as Centro Histórico, the historic part of the town, part of the famed Reforma Avenue. They were going after, it seemed like, American name companies, businesses, but also some of the iconic landmarks throughout Mexico. Ironically, the city has spent like 6 months trying to renovate some of these areas, the Azartes, the Parque Alameda, the Alameda Park, the monument to the revered president Benito Juarez. Much of that was vandalized just in a few hours on Saturday.
Well, just yesterday, the new president, signed a pact with the country's leading political parties to increase competition in the telecommunications sector and to overhaul the education system. He's pledged to do all kinds of things, to bring 15 million people out of poverty, to double the number of people getting college educations, and to also bring down the murder rate. I would assume that those in opposition and many of the people throughout Mexico are not necessarily putting great credence in these promises?
Right. I mean, they're seen more as symbolic measures. I mean, they're important, but at least you see all the parties coming together and saying, let's do something, let's try to push this country forward, as Peña Nieto said on Saturday, let's really make Mexico a middle-class country. And he did outline that his top priority is to try to return security, a sense of peace to Mexicans. And all that went really well. But, I mean, it really remains to be seen whether they can do that. I think the belief and the sense of Mexico is that if anyone can do that, if anyone can rein in the powerful unions, anyone who's powerful from unions to telecommunication moguls like the richest man in the world, Carlos Slim, or powerful drug traffickers, it's Dupri. I mean, I think that's one big reason why they were voted back into office.
Well, 21 out of 31 of the state governors are with Dupri, as I read things, right?
Right, exactly. Although some of the states that are Dupri actually voted against the pre and the presidential election, and that, those are the states that were that have been hard hit most by the violence in Mexico.
Well, the pre has been so identified with corruption and coercion, and yet there's a definite shift here from Calderon, particularly with respect to going after drug cartels and the leaders in drug cartels. Nieto has said he just wants to bring the homicide rate down, hasn't he?
He said he wants to bring the homicide rate. On Saturday, he said, look, there are other ways to get this thing done, not just through force. We have to transform, reconstruct the social fabric of this country. He's been very vague about what he will do, and I think that's really the question that a lot of the people in the Obama administration are waiting for. You know, what kinds of hints are they going to see in the next few days, few weeks, to suggest, you know, whether he's going to continue Calderon's route or not. We haven't seen enough of that yet.
Hasn't he talked about putting state police under more centralized command as opposed to having a local police control and doing crime fighting sort of modeled after the French?
Absolutely. And in talking to a couple of pre-members on Friday and Saturday, they kept stressing, look, this is nothing really unusual. It's sort of like in the United States, you know, building a big homeland security to oversee, to be the umbrella for all these agencies. The fear in Mexico is that the Interior Ministry for many years was the eyes and ears of the PRI and oftentimes led to repression or political espionage. So far the opposition government has said, look, we're not really opposed to you, but let's try to put in some kind of mechanisms that will assure accountability to the government and to the people.
And what about the oil reserves? I mean, this is pretty major, and he's talking about opening up to international partnerships. How are the people receiving that?
Yeah, I'm sorry, the oil?
Yeah, especially opening up to international partnerships, like Pemex.
Well, you know, he named Emilio Lozoya to head Pemex, and there's a sense that he's a young technocrat, a reformer, that, you know, maybe they can do that, but no one's really, you know, thinking it's in the bag. I mean, I think this is going to be one of the most hard-fought battles for the Peña in the next few years.
Another hard-fought battle I just wanted to touch bases with you on, Alfredo, is what's going to happen with respect to, well, transportation costs of goods going across the border, talking about open skies and cross-border trucking. Can he really bring those things into fruition, do you think?
He's been saying that since he was a candidate, that his top goal is to try to built the border into a 21st century area, that it built the infrastructure. And that's something that's an area where I think the U.S. government has said, at least in the past, that they're willing to work with the Mexican government to try to ease trade between both countries. It's $500 billion in U.S.-Mexico trade, but I think the potential is there for a lot more.
He's also said he's ready to initiate a guest worker program.
He has said that, and it's interesting listening to him over the last few days. I mean, you hear a lot of the populist rhetoric from the old PRI. A lot of people walked away feeling happy. I know that friends of mine who were guest workers or knew of guest workers were thrilled about that. But a lot depends on the U.S. economy. You know, if the economy picks up and they can try to find a way to ease the flow of workers going back and forth, I think it's something that Mexicans really want to see. I mean, the Mexicans would like to see workers go to the United States and then find a way to come back and forth and not be, and as they say here, be held hostage in the United States.
Well, it seems, certainly from his visit to Washington, as if he and President Obama are going to work closely together, or at least initially that seems to be the case.
That seems to be the case. I think the likely naming of Eduardo Medina Mora, who's the former Attorney General, and was also head of the CISEN, which is kind of the spy agency in Mexico, is something that the Americans applaud because they worked well with them in the past. He was there when they came up with the Mérida Initiative back in 2007. So that seems like it's welcome news for the Americans.
Alfredo Corchado, again, with us from Mexico City, as Mexico Bureau Chief with the Dallas Morning News, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Michael. Take care.
You too. And by the way, you can join us if you have questions or comments about the recent election of President-elect Nieto, who is inaugurated on Saturday. Feel free to join us. This is a half-hour segment, so the time to do that with your questions or comments would be now. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us at 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free for your calls, 866-733-6786, or feel free to email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I want to bring Andrew Seely into this now, former director of the Mexico Institute with the Woodrow Wilson Center, now vice president for programs with the Wilson Center, joining us from the nation's capital. Andrew Seely, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Michael, good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Nieto's talking about really advancing the economy. It's done better. They had 3.5-4 now GDP and lowest level of illegal immigration in decades. I mean, economic issues look better and things look more promising. Unemployment, in fact, is officially lower.
Yeah, in many ways, Pinieto is starting off with a favorable situation, and hopefully he can do something to improve on it. But he's handed an economy that is growing. Migration is way down, which will help in the relationship with the U.S. over time, as well as communities in Mexico that need to keep their best and brightest at home. And violence has actually plateaued. It hasn't really gone down. I mean, I'm not sure we're at a point where we could say it's going down dramatically, but it has gone down from its highest level. It seems to have plateaued. Now, again, it's up to him. I mean, can he take what is modest but encouraging growth and turn it into real development for the country and really make Mexico more of a middle-class society? Can he take the plateauing of violence and really begin to create rule of law and bring violence down? These are big questions.
They are big questions. And they remain certainly unanswered in May for a while. But doesn't he also have to face a kind of formidable, well, let's call it image problem? I mean, the PRI has been so identified with corruption for so long, and so has he been to a great extent.
Yeah, I think there's sort of a mixture of reactions to Peña Nieto and to the PRI. I mean, on one hand, Mexicans distrust the PRI, and certainly people outside the country do as well. They see it as the party of corruption and the party that mismanaged the economy over time. But on the other hand, and this was really on evidence over the past few days, it's also a party that knew how to get things done at different points. And we saw it over the weekend. I mean, he had a speech that hit a lot of the right notes. It was a very well-organized transition process and very well-organized unveiling of his cabinet. He was able to reach yesterday a pact with the two main opposition parties on a set of issues they're going to try and push through Congress. And I think a lot of Mexicans are looking at this and saying, wow, we don't know if they're honest or corrupt. I mean, we're not really sure yet if these are the good guys or not. But on the other hand, they do seem to get things done. There's a kind of efficiency in how they get things done. And the knock on President Calderon has been, people thought he was honest. They thought he had good intentions, but they felt like the country was often out of control. And here's the opposite, right? They're not sure if the PRI is on the up and up, but at the same time, they feel like the country's returning to some stability here and some leadership, and perhaps the PRI can get things done and can negotiate things.
Well, again, he's talked a lot about security cooperation, about reducing money laundering and arms trafficking, those kinds of things, and working together with the United States. And in fact, just on the economic plane, the United States co-manufactures 40% with Mexico.
Yeah.
So are we going to see, in your judgment, a lot more of that kind of cooperative effort north of the border with south of the border?
I think we will, and I think for a couple reasons. One is, it helps that migration's down. I think that allows, the two big issues in the relationship have been migration, illegal immigration primarily, people coming without documents, and drug trafficking and dealing with violence. Increasingly as both of those come down, and I think actually violence is likely to come down over time. I don't think it's going to come down in a dramatic fashion unless Mexico does more on building rule of law on courts and prosecutors and police. But it will start to come down, I have a feeling. As that comes down, that allows us to talk about a lot of the economic issues. And secondly, you've got in the U.S. a scenario where both Republicans and Democrats are now talking about immigration reform. And, it's popular again, realizing the Latino vote matters a great deal, more than many politicians realized. You'll probably see some symbolic visits by politicians to Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America. It's a good time, I think, to push the U.S.-Mexico agenda and the economic agenda particularly. And the reality is, you know, for 23 states in the U.S., Mexico is either the first or second most important export market. Mexico is the second biggest export market for the U.S. after Canada in general. But for 23 states, and this is, you know, it's California and it's Texas, obviously, but it's also, it turns out, New Hampshire and Michigan and Nebraska and Iowa and a bunch of states in the middle of the country that depend on trade with Mexico. So it's a good time to think about how do you make commerce quicker, how do you get small and medium businesses into international trade, and how do you just facilitate, you know, how do we stop committing economic suicide by making it so hard to get across the border all the time with trucks and with goods that come back and forth.
And again, we're talking with Andrew Seeley. If you just joined us, we spoke earlier with Alfredo Corchado, who is Mexico Bureau Chief. He was with us from Mexico City, and Andrew Seeley is with us from Washington. He's presently the Vice President for Programs for the Wilson Center and is the former director of the Mexico Institute with the Woodrow Wilson Center. You are welcome to join us. I know many of you have some questions, concerns, comments you'd like to get on record here, so please feel free to join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We're talking about Mexico until the 9:30 mark, so time to call would be now, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. And are you from Mexico? Do you have friends or family there? And what do you think about the new president's priorities and what they should be? And what about the role of the United States? We're trying to really take up all of those in this half-hour segment. Ambitious, to be sure, but we'd certainly like to hear from you. You can go to our Facebook page and mark your comments or questions there, or you can also tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Let's go right to callers, and we begin, Paola, with you. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. It's Paola.
Paola, I'm sorry.
I'm calling because under the Obama administration, more than a million people have been deported. Families have been separated. I'm taking that a majority of these people are probably Mexican, you know, undocumented people. So how is that really tough immigration or deportation stance that the Obama administration has taken going to change now? And are they going to loosen up a bit, or are they going to continue cracking down on businesses who hire the undocumented and going into, you know, police stations and the courts and deporting everyone that's been detained for minor and major crimes?
Well, I don't know if you have a crystal ball on this, Andrew Seeley, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing with the Obama administration is they stopped doing the major sort of raids where they'd come into a business and start rounding people up. They would start more targeted enforcement, you know, much more bureaucratic, looking through companies' records, taking people who were arrested for other crimes. The bad thing for people who are in the country without documents is that, you know, a lot of immigration enforcement policy is now hardwired into government. I mean, you know, you are arrested. This is secure communities. They started with other initiatives, but secure communities is now the big one. If you're arrested, your fingerprints are sent to the FBI and then sent to DHS. This is not applied everywhere in the country yet, but it will be soon. And, you know, if they have a deportation order out for you, then they can deport you. If you're in the prison system, you know, they'll check your legal records, even for minor violations. And so, you know, deportations have gone up enormously, and I don't think it's going to change. It really is hardwired in now to how the federal government works and how many of the state government works. What I think may be the turning point is if Republicans and Democrats get serious about immigration reform. I mean, that the only thing that's going to change this is actually looking at our broken immigration system and saying, wait a minute, we need to do something differently. We need to have a different visa system. Our visa systems from 1965. Let's create a real visa system for the needs of 2012, 2013, modern era. Let's figure out what we do with people who are already in this country. How do we put them on a pathway towards, you know, coming out of the shadows? And then let's enforce the system that we've created in a serious way. If that happens, the numbers will go down a lot, just because a lot of people will be put on a pathway to legal residency.
Well, that's always been the big challenge. But the numbers have gone down, and illegal immigration has been dropped to almost net zero, may even be negative now. So you can get more.
It may be negative.
Yeah.
I think it is. I mean, it's as near as we can tell. There's a slight uptick right now, but it still seems to be net zero. And the reality reality is, I mean, part of it is the tough immigration measures have discouraged people from coming and have taken people out of the country. But part of it is, you know, U.S. economy is not that good, and the economy in Mexico is actually doing better. And so people are more willing to try their hand in their hometowns in Mexico than coming north. Central America, we've actually seen an uptick in Central American migration to the U.S., but not in Mexican migration yet.
Well, let me thank the caller and go right to another caller, and that's Tom. Join us, Tom. You're on.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm a little bit indignant at the tenor of the discussion, because why does every new discussion about Mexican-U.S. relations have to bend towards what the Mexico has to do to answer U.S. worries like, quote-unquote, illegal immigration and such? What about all this legal and illegal flow of arms trafficking to Mexico, which is causing all this terror, 40,000 people dead thus far? I mean, isn't the problem of terror, drug cartel terror, real and present?
Well, we get go ahead. You want to answer that, Andrew Seeley?
And you know, it's something that we always talk about as a circular trade, because it is, you know, what you see is drugs coming north, and you see money from U.S. consumers of narcotics as well as weapons going south to Mexico. I mean, this is the crisis of violence in Mexico, which has taken thousands of lives. You know, needed two to dance here, which is, you know, Mexico's very weak rule of law, the fact that for organized crime it was a good place to operate, because you can buy your way into the policing and judicial system, and U.S. consumers who put billions of dollars a year into financing the cartels. And then we shouldn't deceive ourselves. I mean, this is U.S. money for the most part that finances the cartels and finances the violence of people who use illegal narcotics in this country.
And let me thank the caller for that. Here's a listener, Sam, online, who says, the problem with the PRI, aside from being a party of the rich which manipulates the poor, is that it has a history of political violence, and Peña Nieto seems no different. Two protesters were killed and many injured in the violent police repression of activists and townsfolk in Atenco, and Mexico State has become one of the places with the highest rates of violence towards women.
Certainly all true. I mean, the statistics tell us that it has a high rate of violence towards women. Hard to tell if that's Peña Nieto's fault or not, but certainly is the case. I would say the encouraging signs we saw from Peña Nieto's cabinet, I think there are, you know, more encouraging and less encouraging things we've seen, but one of the more encouraging signs is he picked as his, the new head of public security, the person who's been the public security chief, the police chief in Mexico City, who is known to be more of a democratic policeman. He is someone who has really led probably the most effective efforts, very much intelligence-based, very much willing to dialogue with civil society in Mexico City, and he's the guy in charge of reforming the police and overseeing the security strategy. But I think it remains to be seen, you know, what's going to happen, what their strategy will be. We have not yet seen, in the way that they've shown us their economic strategy, which they've been very clear about, we have not seen the same thing on the public security side, and it remains to be seen what will happen there.
You think, well, there has been a great deal of criticism of the U.S. program Plan Mexico for emphasizing militarization over social programs. How do you think that's going to go down?
You know, I think that's shifting. The balance has shifted over the past couple of years away from a military side to much more building rule of law. I think that will continue most likely. There's been a movement to work with states on reforming police and judicial system, as well as work at the national level. My sense is that will continue. And one of the things that, you know, I know is being floated as an idea is that the Mexican government, what they've said they want to do, and you know, again, we haven't seen the specifics on this, but they've said that they want to focus on how to prevent the worst kinds of violence against citizens, the killing of civilians, the killing of reporters, the killing of civic activists. You know, rather than just go after every cartel, how do we actually prevent them from doing the worst kind of violence? If that happens, I think one of the open questions is, what can the U.S. do to support that? I mean, considering that the cartels operate because they have a market in the U.S., you know, if they decide to go after a group that has committed a particularly brutal act of violence, can we do something on the U.S. side that backs that up? Go after their distribution operations in the U.S. on U.S. streets, because that would be an interesting complement, which is if the CEPAs or whichever group commits a brutal act of violence, you know, does the U.S. respond, U.S. government respond by saying we'll go after their, you know, the folks that are in the U.S. that support this operation and put money into it?
Andrew Seeley, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure, Michael.
Joined also this segment by Alfredo Corchado from Mexico City. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an exciting new venture that KQED is involved in. Stay where you are. I'm Michael Krasny.